You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by Roman. Roman is a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Just head on over to getroman.com/SGP for $15 off your first month. That's getroman.com/SGP. And we're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is home to the Best Ball Mania 2 contest, where you can win $1 million. That's right, $1 million. Sign up now at UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN. That's UnderdogFantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And finally, we're also brought to you by Odds Jam. Odds Jam is the betting tool every sharp bettor needs, bringing you the latest prices and presenting the best betting opportunities. Dominate the marketplace with Odds Jam. Use promo code SGP and get 5% off. SportsGamblingPodcast.com/OddsJam.
Hello, my little degenerate boys and girls. We're going to keep pretending that females actually listen to the podcast, even though we really don't have any proof that they do, other than mothers of ours. Welcome. Whoever you are, whatever gender you are, whoever you want to identify, thank you for coming to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. This would be episode 39. Who am I going to dedicate this one to? Not a whole lot of choices for 39. I'm going to go with the Detroit Pistons' Jeremy Grant, who I think I interviewed for Slam Magazine years ago. I interviewed one of the brothers, one of the Grant brothers. I think it was him. And, you know, he is the son of Harvey Grant, brother of, I guess that would make him nephew of Horace Grant. So anyhow, and this one goes up to Jeremy Grant. So I'm Jeff Fox, your host. Hi. Thanks for coming once again to the greatest podcast in the history of podcasts. Hopefully you're listening to us on our MMA Gambling Podcast feed. Numbers keep going up there. So thank you for everyone for subscribing there. And if you have not subscribed and you're listening to us on the Sports Gambling Podcast main feed, please switch over and make sure you subscribe to the dedicated features for our podcast for all your degenerate goodness. And there's, like I've said before, there's nothing more scummy and degenerate than betting on people beating each other up and who's going to beat the other one up most. And every week we seem to have a broken arm or a broken leg. So it's fun times. So you may also know me from such places as sportsgamblingpodcast.com, the website. I write and edit on there. I also run the MMA website, MMA-manifesto.com. You should pop over there and at the very least enter our pick'em contest for this event coming up this Saturday. Our good overlords at Sports Gambling Podcast are actually sponsoring the contest this week, giving away a $50 gift card to anywhere in the world where that you would like. So make sure you pop over there, check out the goodness. And whatnot. You didn't mishear. You did hear someone chuckling earlier, which is what basically he's on the show to do, laugh at the jokes, be the brunt of some of the jokes. But sometimes I'm nice, sometimes I'm not. We'll see what I'm like today. This man is also a host of the Top Turtle MMA podcast and the Prelim Picker podcast, which I hear is going to be a must listen to this week because his savvy co-host on it is super, super smart, and he's going to really upstage the main host, and he may even embarrass him on his own podcast. We'll see if he's behaved or not. I just know he's a really super cool guy. What else can I tell you about this man? I think he probably gets nervous at the start of every podcast because he never knows where this introduction is going to go. I don't even know where it's going to go. I don't really plan these things in advance. Sometimes I, you know, say some things I may not is that English, what I'm trying to say? Sometimes I say things I shouldn't say, and I may dox him. I may tell you what he really is like off the air and what, you know, what he does for a living, where he lives and all this stuff. But what tidbit can I give you this week? Oh, I know what I can tell you this week about him, other than him being the king of the Go-Go Plata, self-proclaimed. He is such, I think the kids call it a stan. He's such a stan for me that he named his youngest child the same name as my youngest child is named. So that's really, that's creepy stuff. But anyhow, Daniel Gumby Vreeland is his name, and he can stop being nervous because I'm done introducing him now.
You know, I kind of wish we could get some super fan out there. If you exist, super fan, could you please chart out a quick graph of how long the introductions are by episode? Because I'm pretty sure I get an extra 5 to 6 seconds every single episode, and it just incrementally growing up every single time.
Yes. Well, that's basically the one time where I'm at peace, and it's just me, and it's not you butting in with all your insightful comments and all the research you've done. It's just me rambling on. So I kind of like the calmness of the introductions before you come in and take over with your big brain of yours.
Do you think if this continues on, we can just have an episode where you only introduce me?
Like, I'd be fine with that.
I mean, we probably need to fit the ad reads in and whatnot, but like it might get to that point at this rate.
Intro and the ad reads, and then we're good, yeah. Well, there's no UFC coming up next week, so we're going to have two shows where we're going to need content, so there you go. That's a very good idea. It could just be me giving and taking away compliments to Daniel on the show. But enough nonsense. We got work to do here, ladies and gentlemen. I'll keep saying ladies because I'm sure there's got to be at least one or two that aren't our mothers listening, right? There's got to be.
I assume there is, yeah.
Okay, good. This weekend we are talking about UFC Fight Night Font versus Garbrandt, a.k.a. Here comes the a.k.a.s. This is almost as long as the intro. A.k.a. UFC Fight Night 188, a.k.a. UFC on ESPN Plus 46, a.k.a. UFC Vegas 27. Do you have anything else you like to call it, Dan? Sometimes you have good nicknames.
No, the Vegas ones tend to be the ones I use. UFC yeah. Vegas 27 is my go-to.
Yes, yes. The other ones are far too long. So it's actually a good fight card, really. You can check out the whole fight card and fighter rankings and scouting reports and all that stuff over on MMA-manifesto.com. It's the second plug, I think, so far. We're only a few minutes in. So if you want to check over there, you'll see the whole fight card there. But yeah, I rank the fight cards based on the strength of the fighters on paper, and this one ranked well above average, which kind of surprised me. But it's a sneaky good card, actually.
Yeah, I thought so too, and it's not just sneaky good in terms of who's on it, but it's also sneaky good in terms of really weird style matchups that are kind of hard to peg.
Yes, this is that basically our pre-production this week, other than hammering down a time where we actually were going to record, was talking about how difficult this card is to handicap. It's a tough one. It's not like I had said. Also, it's not basically due to not knowing fighters. Dan knows everyone always. I know 99% of the people, but it's just hard to peg a winner in a lot of these fights, and the odds aren't always what I expected too. So anyhow, enough faddling and tiptoeing around. Let's get right down to it. First, let me tell you about our first friend I should tell you about, WynnBET. WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today and you'll receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WynnBET.com. That's WynnBET.com. Download the app today. I'm sure they've got a lot of good NBA playoff odds on there now. I will be doing NBA playoff preview articles on Sports Gambling Podcast coming out in a couple of days once the actual real live playoffs start this weekend. All right, let's talk about some fist cuffs. That's what you're all here to hear about. So, as I said, UFC Fight Night versus Garbrandt is the event in question, May 22nd, which would be this Saturday, back at the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. So they're back behind closed doors. No paying audience. I'm sure Dana White will have some of his cronies there. But and back to the small cage. Did you notice how huge the cage looked last week, Dan? They were using the big cage again because they were on the road for UFC 262. It looked huge to me.
Yeah, it looked really the time I noticed it looked really big was as Charles Oliveira was walking down Michael Chandler after stinging him. I was like, seems like he's got like a whole different zip code that he can run off to.
Yeah, I never really pay much attention to the size of the cage, but yeah, it really, seeing so many events in a row in the small cage in the Apex, it really, really stood out. So that's something to keep in mind when you're betting this card. This is a smaller cage, so if there's a certain fighter you think works better in distance or works better fighting out of a phone booth, then this something you got to keep in mind with the cage. So, and this event is on ESPN Plus. The prelims 4 p.m. Eastern, the main card 7 p.m. Eastern, and they're kicking things off with a lightweight belt between Rafael Alves, which is basically like a mix and match Brazilian fighter name, basically Rafael and Alves, so the first and the last name. You could mix and match that with many different people, and that's a Brazilian fighter for you. He's fighting Demir Ismagulov this coming week. Is there something funny, Dan?
No, I just love the breaks you need in the middle of saying Eastern Europe's name. You basically, it sounds like they all have hyphens in them.
It's true. Ismagulov. All right. Alves, 19-9, 7 knockouts, 7 submissions. So he is a very well-rounded fellow. Let me see. Of his loss, this is of note, all of his losses have come via stoppage. 3 knockouts and 6 submissions. I don't remember ever breaking down a person like that who has that many losses, and all of them are via an actual stoppage. That's very rare. This will be his UFC debut. He got into the big show off the Dana White Contender Series, which he won his fight there. He's won 5 straight fights. He's a plus 410 dog if you want to go against our advice and go for a massive dog, which we've told you in the past not to do, then there you go. Ismagulov, comma, Demir, 19-1, 9 knockouts, 1 submission. He's never been finished. He's got 1 decision loss on his record. 3-0 in the UFC. However, he's not fought since August of 2019. Do you know why? This isn't a quiz. I couldn't find out why he's been gone so long. Do you know?
No, I know injuries were part of it. I think some of it also was getting a visa to get in the country, especially once coronavirus happened. Because, I know a couple of the Russian guys didn't have all that much trouble, but he is not Russia, if I'm mistaken, despite the fact he sometimes trains out of Russia, but I think he's Uzbek, I'm not mistaken. So, I think being in Russia is already a visa situation for him. So getting to the United States from Uzbekistan via Russia is not an easy one. So I think some visa stuff, some injury stuff. There was a lot of people talking about, where the hell did he go? So I know it wasn't super common knowledge either.
Well, Dan's answer is full of crap because he is Russian. So you can disregard everything Dan just said. He is from Russia. It's Orenburg, Russia. So, but I'm sure you're right about the visa. That you're thinking of someone else who's, what you call him, Uzbek? Someone else is an Uzbek.
I think he's from Uzbekistan. Give me a second on this. I'm going to put the intern on it.
Wikipedia, which says he is from Orenburg. But do you think our people really care, Dan?
They don't. No, they don't. But now I'm going to feel
you
like
you got to look it up. Right.
Yeah, now I'm going to need
you look it up. I'm going to break him down some more. All right, now that I've called Dan out. Anyhow, he was 10-1 in M1, which is the big, it's basically a global promotion that runs out of Russia. Pretty well respected promotion. So he was 10-1 there. He was also their lightweight champion. He is an inch taller than Alves and has 2 inches reach. He has the striking and grappling stats in his favor, and he's the more active striker of the two, but just keep note that Alves has only fought once inside a UFC cage that was on the Contender Series. And Ismagulov is minus 600. I'll take him, even though we'll make no money off it. I will take him at minus 600.
So I'm going to start by saying Demir Ismagulov, I was wrong, is not Uzbek, but both of his parents are Kazakh. They're from Kazakhstan. He was born in Russia. You were right about that. But if you look him up on, he carries a Kazakhstani flag into the cage with him. Right. So I wasn't crazy. He's not Russian, although he is Russian.
Maybe we got 2 episodes coming up where we need topics. Maybe you can break down the whole Eastern European political
the Soviet bloc
climate, and and where everything's broken up into, and all the different ethnicities and religions and stuff like that. Does that sound good?
I don't think that would be entertaining for anybody at all. But okay. I am going to tell you, you probably also won't be entertained by watching Demir Ismagulov, because he's like, he's your prototypical Eastern European fighter in that, like, he is suffocating. He has really good top control. And he's just going to use that to beat a guy who's got crazy good knockout power and isn't going to get a chance to use it. I mean, like, go back and look at his 3 wins in the UFC. Granted, they are some time ago before he had his big long layoffs. But he beat Joel Alvarez, who is pretty nasty with his submissions. And he did it just pretty much by grinding him out. You could say the same thing about his fight with Thiago Moises. Like, in beating Thiago Moises, I mean, in retrospect, that's such a good win. And so for me, like, you're right. If you look at this fight, Rafael Alves is clearly the guy who looks like he's got more finishing ability. But, like, Ismagulov controls where the fight is. He puts you up against the cage. Even when he didn't get takedowns, like, because he wasn't super successful against Moises, he did chain them together enough to, like, put Moises up against the fence and then, like, score the majority of the strikes there. And, you know, he can control where the fight's going to go. So, ultimately, I think that that's going to be enough here to beat Alves.
Is -600 a fair number, you think?
I think it's probably a tad inflated because of the layoff. Like, I don't love picking anybody at that number, period, first of all. Yeah. But also, I don't like anybody with that kind of layoff at a number like that. I would feel much more comfortable down in, like, the 350 to 400s, which, you know, granted, is not a huge difference from 600, but it's enough of a difference where 600 is almost like I don't even want to hashtag throw him in a parlay at that number.
Oh, we haven't said that for a long time. That's an oldie. That's an oldie for our longtime listeners. And just a reminder that fighters who have been out of the cage for at least a year are now 31-28. It's gotten even higher since last fight. So they're continuing to go against common thought on that. All right, let's go with more lightweights. How about we go with another Demir? Demir Hadzovic versus Yancy Medeiros. Let's go with Medeiros first. He's 15-7 with 1 no contest, 8 knockouts, 4 submissions. 4 of his losses have come via knockout. He's 6-7 with 1 no contest in the UFC. That's due to him losing 3 straight fights. That took a big hit to his record there. In that 3-fight losing skid, he's been TKO'd in 2 of them. Last fight was a decision loss, and the 2 before were both TKOs. He's not fought since last February 2020, we're talking. Before the UFC, he was 2-0 in Strikeforce. He's 1 inch taller, 5 inches of reach, 1 year younger than Hadzovic. He is the more active striker of the two, more active landing strikes, not necessarily throwing them. As for Hadzovic, 13-6, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's 3-4 in the UFC, so this could be a loser leaves town match, really. He's on a 2-fight losing skid, so some guy's going to end up on either a 3-fight or a 4-fight losing skid, which is not good when the UFC seems to be hell-bent on cutting a bunch of fighters at this point. He has also been out of the cage since March, over a year, March of 2020 for him. Striking stats are in his favor. He's at -120. Are we going with Demir again here? Back-to-back Demirs?
Yeah. I'm going to double down on the Demirs. Yeah, I'm going to take Hadzovic, too. Look, I actually think Hadzovic is a lot better than his record shows. If you look at his fights, the fights he's lost largely have just been to superior grapplers. And guys who are damn good grapplers, too. You know, we just saw Christos Yagos come off that great finish of Sean Soriano, where he hit an anaconda choke, put Soriano out cold. You know, we know he's a great grappler. We saw Renato Moicano just kind of serve Demir Hadzovic up on a platter with a quick rear naked choke and then, you know, basically yell in his face for not letting him fight longer. Alan Patrick out-grappled him, who's a big, strong grappler type. But the guys who go in there and strike with Demir Hadzovic don't have very much luck. And even Hadzovic can mix in the takedowns on them. So while his takedowns defense and submission defense is bad against good grapplers, he seems to actually have the advantage over other guys who want to get in there and slug it out with him. So I think that's Yancy Medeiros' style, right? Like, Medeiros wants to slug it out. Lately, he hasn't even really been able to pull the trigger. He's just kind of gone in there and kind of point-fighted and lost those fights. So even if he comes out with, like, a lot of fury, I actually think that fight kind of leans to Hadzovic in both that he'll be able to mix up his approaches and, in addition to that, he's probably got the better KO power there.
Yeah, his other UFC loss him being Hadzovic was what Mirbek Taisimov. So yeah, it's all grapplers that are beating him, and that is not Yancy Medeiros. He's more of the just bleed type of fighter. So good matchup for Hadzovic. I'm taking him also. So we're back to back on Demir's this weekend. Let's go. What weight class should we go to next? Let's go down a weight class to featherweight. Josh Koulibaly versus Sha Yai Lan. Who, do you know what his real name is, Dan?
Oh man, this is another one. Their real name.
His first name is Sha Yai Lan, but he just goes by Sha Space Y Lan now. So they're taking his first name and breaking it into two.
Or
Yai Lan Sha, depending.
Yeah, because we don't like to do things the right way.
Yeah, and the last name is Noor Dan Beaky. I believe you can call him Wolverine. You can call him Wolverine, which I would prefer to call him. We'll call him Wolverine. So the Wolverine. Hopefully Dan can shed some light on him after I do the breakdown here. He's fought exclusively on the Chinese regional scene, which means Dan probably knows a lot about him. Surprisingly, 17-6, 7 knockouts, 5 submissions. So he's a finisher, at least in that scene. Forever has come via submission. However, he's not fighting a guy who submits people, so he's good there. He's on 2-fight win streak. Plus 200 is, I believe, at least his last 5 fights were at lightweight. He's dropped down to featherweight for this one. This will be his UFC debut. Josh Koulibaly, 8-1-1 with 5 knockouts. He lost his last fight via knockout, so that was his first career loss. He's still looking for his first UFC win. He's 0-1-1. He drew in his last fight. And his other loss was a knockout before that. He's 2 inches taller. He's at minus 260. I'll take him unless Dan has a really good intel on this regional Chinese fighter, which I have no knowledge of.
I think I have some pretty good insight here, but I don't think it's going to make you feel any better about the potential of picking him because, you know, he's coming out of WLF, which I actually think is a pretty good promotion over there in China. But we just saw 3 people debut. And not look particularly good doing so, including Zhu Rong, who actually has a win over Sha Yilan. So, you know, we just watched him get beat in his debut and look pretty terrible doing it. So, I actually think Sha Yilan is not going to have an easy time with Koulibaly. If you watch any highlights of him, the thing you'll notice is he does swing big, which is probably why he's got a bunch of KOs and, you know, he's able to get the guys down and get in their face all the time. But, like, when he swings, they're so wild. Like, his strikes do not come back to his face. They loop. And if you've watched either of those Josh Koulibaly fights, and granted, you know, you're right, he hasn't come away with the win yet, but he did go in there and last almost 2 full rounds with Jaylen Turner, who's a beast. And he went in there and fought Charles Jourdain, who's a savage.
All right.
Yeah,
well, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, might as well use those terms. Thanks, Joe Rogan. Like, he went in there with Charles Jourdain and struck with him and got a split decision draw. So, like, cool about striking can hang in there with just about anybody. He even wound up on top of Jourdain for a little while. I think against the guy who throws kind of wildly and isn't all that composed in what he does, I actually think Josh Koulibaly will have a pretty easy time with him.
All right, I agree. So we're going 2 Demirs and a Josh to start things off. And let's go with a Roman now. Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes 3-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come out short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/SGP now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships free with 2-day shipping. Whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/SGP and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with the doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/SGP now to get $15 off your first month. Look, this is a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/SGP. Get started now and save $15 on your first month of treatment. Don't be a Gumby is basically what I'm saying.
Don't be a Gumby.
Don't be a Gumby, everyone. All right. We're putting the windows open. Hopefully the neighbors enjoy my ED ad read, which I'm sure hopefully someone's going for a walk and like, what are they doing in that household? All right. We did featherweights. Let's go to the lowest. Oh, one last thing on Sha Yilan. I noticed he lost to someone named Allison. So if he can't beat a girl, I'm definitely not taking him to beat a guy in the UFC. There we go. There's a horrible joke.
That's the insight you guys came here for, right?
Exactly. You came for that kind of insight. All right. I bet 99% of our listeners did not know that fact, though. So there you go. Flyweights, Bruno Gustavo da Silva. You can just call him Bruno Silva, even though there's another Bruno Silva in the UFC, and I think there's a billion others that are in MMA. But he is fighting a flyweight bout against Victor Rodriguez. Let's tell you about Rodriguez. He's 5-3. All five of his wins have come via knockout, which is insane for a flyweight. That's some crazy finishing power. He's 0-1 in the UFC. I don't remember. Who did he fight?
He
I don't even remember
Adrian
seeing this
Yanez
guy.
And got just absolutely pieced up in like 45 seconds.
I have no knowledge of this fellow. He is an inch taller than Silva, 2 inches reach, 2 years younger, plus 260 is where you can get him. As for this Bruno Silva, the flyweight one, he's 11-5-2 with one no contest. He's got 4 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's taking this fight on short notice. I'll throw that stat for you. I got it here. Short notice or late replacement fighters, I deem people who have taken a fight on less than a month notice, are 34-60 in the past year and a half, so 36%. So it seems to be a detriment to take fights on short notice. Anyhow, he's 1-2 in the UFC with one no contest. He got his first win last fight, TKO win. He's got both striking stats in his favor. He's so basically all around better striking stats, plus he lands more strikes than Rodriguez. Grappling stats also in his favor, minus 350. I'm going to be boring and go with another chalky chalk.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with you with the chalk for a couple of reasons. Number one, one of my first problems with Victor Rodriguez is he's a guy who comes out of Alaska FC, which ultimately, not to be mean to people who came out of Alaska FC, one of the worst regional promotions out there in terms of how we've seen people perform in the UFC. If you just draw a line of all the guys who we saw up there, you'll find a rare diamond in the rough who wound up doing something pretty good, but most of them wind up being fairly to moderately underwhelming. And in addition to that, he's coming down from bantamweight to flyweight, which, I'm not a fan of the people who take a step down unless they do it really the right way. And, I'm not sure I'm ready to say that this guy is clearly a flyweight and should have been here the whole time. On top of all that, he's fighting the worst possible style for somebody who's cutting a lot of weight again. Bruno Silva, whether or not he gets a lot of takedowns, goes for a ton of takedowns. He did lose to David Dvorak, who is I think he's a top 10 flyweight right now, but he did score 3 takedowns on like 850 attempts, I'm pretty sure. And granted, that's not a great success rate, but that pressing, long, heavy, daunting style is just going to be a nightmare for a guy cutting down to a weight class I'm not even positive he can make. So, I like Bruno Silva in this fight, but more because I'm kind of fading Victor Rodriguez more than I'm really loving Bruno Silva.
So what I heard and all that is Dan hates Alaskans and thinks they're fat. Is that correct?
That's true.
Is that what I heard?
You know me. Some of the fighters that I go to bat for more than any other on the planet actually are Alaskan. Which woman do I say has deserved a title shot for far longer? Who have I said that about?
Take that. If you get your bingo cards out, it
Lauren
Murphy.
Murphy. That's right. And Lauren Murphy is
Murphy.
From Alaska. So, yeah, I don't just shit on Alaska. That's not my style. But, Alaska FC does not turn out the best prospects. So, I'm fading Alaska mostly on this one.
That's really not surprising. Like, it's a pretty remote place, to say the least. It's not like I'm sure they're not getting a whole bunch of fighters traveling in to fight for them. So, plus, there's always a chance that the other Bruno Silva in the UFC, who's, I think, middleweight or light heavyweight, maybe they'll do a swap and he'll actually fight instead of this Bruno Silva, and then I think he's going to crush him.
Yeah, it's going to be a big size disparity.
80-pound size disparity. All right, let's go to – I'm trying to cause a controversy, but Dan put out that fire, so we'll keep moving on, and hopefully I can catch him eventually. Welterweights, because I need a subtitle for the podcast. I come up with subtitles every week, so I don't have one yet. So
Fate Alaska works.
Fate Alaska. Okay, that's true. That might work. All right, welterweights. Kurt McGee, he's still around. He's fighting Claudio Silva in a welterweight battle. McGee is 19-10, 5 knockouts, 5 submissions, 8-9 in the UFC. He's lost 3 straight, and he's only won 1 of his last 6. He was the Tough 11 champion way back, I don't even remember when, a long time ago. He was 3-1 in the house, and then he ended up winning the championship. He's got 4 inches of reach, 2 years. He's 2 years younger than Silva. He is more active strikers at minus 100. Quick quiz. When was Tough 11, Dan? Go. Don't look it up.
It had to have been 2009, 2010.
Which one, answer? Hurry. All right, let's see. Dan's like a savant here. 10, June 2010.
Yeah, I only know that because I watched the Ultimate Fighter 10 religiously when I was in college because that was the heavyweights one, so I knew 11 came after that.
Yep. Right. Yep. The Kimbo one. That was a fun one.
You mean the Roy Nelson one. If we're going to talk about Chuck Liddell.
Sure.
And God bless.
That's true.
R.I.P. Kimbo Slice. But if we're going to talk about a chunky guy tough, you better talk about the chunkiest of the chunky.
Exactly. All right. Claudio Silva. Don't want to fade him here. Let me give him his due here. He's 14-2. 2 knockouts, 9 submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. He's 5-1 in the UFC. He started off 5-0 and then lost his last fight. Grappling stats in his favor. He's a slight favorite at minus 115. And he's got my vote here. I'll take him at a slight favorite.
Yeah, I'm
going to
take him as a slight favorite against Court McGee here, too. I think people forget. Granted, you know, you said, man, you know, Court McGee's been in the UFC forever. Like, so
2010.
Has Claudio Silva, though. Claudio Silva's been in there.
I know,
it's
surprising.
He's only 5-1, but
he's older.
He got into the UFC in 20.
He's older than
he
Kurt
got to
McGee.
The UFC in 2014. So, like, yeah, he has had 6 fights, but those 6 fights are over 7 years. There was one point where he had a 3.5-year layoff, but that was after beating Leon Edwards. Like, I know it's crazy, and you can't use a 6-year, now 7-year old loss against Leon Edwards. But, like, Claudio Silva's got some skills, and he did that largely in the way that I expect him to be able to beat Court McGee here, right? Like, Court McGee, bruiser, weighs on you, kind of just a grinder. And, like, he's not going to outgrind Claudio Silva, who's, you know, done that to Danny Roberts and submitted him. He did that to Nordine Taleb, who's pretty beastly. Like, I said, it's 7 years old now, but he grinded out Leon Edwards, and I just don't think he's the right kind of opponent for Court McGee. You know, I said Court McGee should have gone out there and just used that, like, really daunting style against Carlos Condit, and it didn't work out because he never even tried it. But even if he tries it here, I don't think it works.
No. I don't think I would even recognize Claudio Silva in a lineup of fighters. He's been around for that long, and I still, like, I looked up his picture and, like, I guess I remember that guy. Yeah, it's a shame that we haven't seen more of him, so. You mentioned Beast, and we got someone named Beast Boy coming up in the next fight, and I think he's a favorite of Dan's. And
he's a very
my records,
chunky guy.
Yes, yeah, according to my records, both these guys in the next fight are chunky guys. The Beast Boy in question would be Chris Barnett, who I believe is 5'9", and I've seen him listed in the past at 287.
I've seen him
over
300 before.
So this is Dan's type of guy right here. This is a chunky guy. He's 21-6 as a pro. He's got 16 knockout wins, so that's another reason to be a fan of his. Half of his losses have come via KO, which isn't really that huge deal when you're fighting at heavyweight and you're only 5'9". This will be his UFC debut, and this will be on short notice. He's won 6 straight fights heading into here. The only really big promotion experience he has, unless Dan's going to correct me, is he fought once in Ryzen where he lost. He's 5 years younger than Ben Rothwell. I'm not sure if I even mentioned he's fighting Ben Rothwell, but that's who he's fighting, Ben Rothwell. And according to my scouting report here, it says chunky, so I believe that will make him a chunky guy. He's also a chunky underdog, plus 240. My first slick segue. I guess the Roman one I did was kind of slick, too. Ben Rothwell, 38-13, 28 knockouts, 6 submissions. I don't really think of him as a knockout guy, but he's got 28 knockouts, which is, I guess I have to do better thinking with my brain. He made his UFC, not his UFC debut, his MMA debut, January of 2001. Were you watching MMA in January 2001?
No, because I would have been 10. I would have been 10, yeah.
I don't think – I think you did the math wrong there. 2001, you were 10?
Or 11. Just turned 11 in 2001.
Yeah, or, January. 11. All right. You're 90?
In August, I would have turned – in 2001? 1989.
Yeah. See, Dan is not – okay, yeah. 11, almost 12. All right? God's sakes, Dan. What would you have been watching instead
baseball.
Of MMA?
Yeah, baseball.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Baseball. Atlanta Braves baseball, correct?
It was all Chipper Jones all the time.
Chipper Jones. Found his rookie card in a box of stuff I had the other day. So maybe I can rip Dan off and make him pay exorbitant prices for it. So this was our typical us going off into a tangent of that has nothing to do with Ben Rothwell. So anyhow, Ben Rothwell, he's been around for 20 years, more than 20 years now. He's in the UFC, he's 8-7. He's fought in a billion other promotions before the UFC. He lost his last fight. He's only won two of his last six. He's 7 inches taller. A big surprise. He's fighting the guy who's 5'9". He's got 4 inches of reach. He, according to my records, is a chunky guy as well. Different kind of chunky, though. His is more like loose chunky. Barnett's more like just like if you know who the world's strongest man Mark Henry is, he's more thick chunky, like more Derek Lewis type chunky. Rothwell's minus, now that I broke down bodies. Rothwell, minus 325. I'm going to take Rothwell. I'm not sure if Dan's going to go with Barnett here. I know he's a fan, but can you really take him?
I've got a whole bunch of things to say. First of all, loose chunky all right. is maybe the worst insult I've ever heard in my whole life. You're not
– No, I don't mean it as an insult. I'm just
describing to people. Loose chunky. There's your episode name right there, loose chunky.
Loose chunky, that's true. But it makes sense, correct? Is it not?
He's a little. I think it's flabby. I like, think flabby is like, the right one for me. I won't ever.
Yeah,
I won't ever call anybody loose chunky like see, in my whole life.
You'll see like a chunky guy at the gym. You're like, okay, that guy's mega strong. I can tell that guy's super strong, even though he's like got a gut. And then there's guys who are loose.
Also, while we were doing this, I looked up Chris Barnett's previous weigh-ins at Inoki Bumbaye 2015, which is a.
Yeah, that's right, he fought there, which was fun.
Yeah,
I love
those events are awesome. So he fought an open weight fight then and weighed in at 333 pounds.
That's fine. I'm 6'6", and I don't know if I could get myself that high. And I'm like 9 inches taller than him. Eating like a pig, I don't think
so
I can get that.
So we're talking about a big dude here, guys. So for those of you who have never seen him before, he's enormous. He's such a big dude. And the best part about watching him, he moves like a very nimble lightweight, maybe. Like, he spins. He's got, like, spinning back kicks. He's got the taekwondo of Dennis Seaver, only at a much larger weight class, which is – it's really, truly incredible to watch. Obviously, the odds come out here because, first of all, he's got such a reach disadvantage here, right? Like, at 5'9 versus a guy who's 6'4", 6'5". He's going to be at a disadvantage, but also I'm going to pick him anyway. And the reason I'm going to pick him anyway is because I think those leg kicks and I think those spinning attacks are going to be enough to slow down Ben Rothwell. And like you said, I don't think Ben Rothwell is a knockout guy anymore. And I also think that if he chooses to mix it up with a Taekwondo black belt here, I don't think it's going to go well. So, if he gets close enough to Barnett, he might tag him, but even if he doesn't, I think we might see, like, a liver kick or a spinning back kick to the gut or just beating the hell out of Rothwell's legs until he's immobile. So especially at a 240 number in a heavyweight fight, I'm going to like a guy who I'm going to give a punching chance to at plus 240 at heavyweight.
Did you know he... fought Ison Kamara in 2019.
I did not know that. I do.
I think we got to find video
I
of that.
Like I was looking back at the list of people he fought, and it's so good. Like he holds a win over Walt Harris. Which first of all is just amazing for a guy who's kind of seen as a journeyman to do that. He beat Kenny Gardner, who people might not know, but was like a big name back then. Ollie Thompson, Alex Nicholson, there's so many fun names on his resume that I would like to see him against in grappling matches and kickboxing matches. And, like, there's not tons of film on him, but the film you will see is great. And I think if he goes out there and beats Rothwell, I bet you he's got a huge fan club the next morning.
Yeah, this could be fun. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be upset if I lose this pick. So he seems like a fun dude. Which brings us to... We're having so much fun, we're not even through the prelims yet. Brings us to our prelim headliner, bantamweights, Ricardo Ramos versus Bill Algeo, Senior Perfecto. And also Beast Boy Chris Barnett, his other nickname is Huggy Bear, just in case that makes anyone want to pick him or not pick him. So let's go with Ricardo Ramos first. He's 14-3 with 3 knockouts, 7 submissions. 2 of his 3 losses are via knockout. He is 5-2 in the UFC. He won his last fight via TKO. He is 2-1 over his last 3. 6 years younger than Senior Perfecto. Grappling stats in his favor. He's at +100. Bill Algeo, I don't know how he's Perfecto if he's 14-5. Time for a new name, dude. He's 14-5 with 3 knockouts, 6 submissions, 2 submission losses on his record, which is of note because half of Ramos's wins have come via submission. Algeo is 1-1 in the UFC. He won his last fight after dropping his debut. He was 0-1 on the Contender Series, 1-0 in World Series of Fighting. He's got 3 inches of height, 1 inch of reach on Ramos, and he's twice more active landing strikes, -125. I think I'm going to go with a dog here and take Ramos at even money.
I'm going to enjoy picking against you again here because I love yes. Senior Perfecto.
I remember that.
His loss in the UFC actually did far more for me than his win. Some of you might not remember. He took a short notice fight against Ricardo Lamas. I think it was 2 days notice, and he went in and had like a 15-minute brawl and just showed like he's like legitimately right. The toughest dude on the planet. You know, you mentioned his loss in the Contender Series. It's to Brendan. I'm going to slaughter this dude's last name because it's the hardest one to say.
Oh, good.
Lornen, who's... like, clearly going to win PFL this year, in my opinion. Like, he's the best guy in PFL. The UFC made a mistake not hiring him after he beat Bill Algeo. And then hired Bill Algeo anyway later down the road because he's damn good and was willing to take a short-notice fight with Ricardo Lamas. So I'm a big fan of Algeo's toughness. You know, you mentioned he's got better output. I'm a big fan of that as well. But the thing I also like about this fight is this is another one where I'm, like, fading Ricardo Ramos. I actually am pretty low on Ricardo Ramos as a fighter. A lot of people remember, you know, his big knockout of Ayman Zahabi as being his moment where he kind of punched his ticket to being popular. And he got beat in that fight for, like, a solid, like, 12 or 13 minutes before he landed his spinning back elbow. He bounces back in his next fight and wins a split decision that I thought he lost. And then he gets kicked to the body and knocked out by Sedin Magomedov. Really, he was a couple of minutes away from being like 0-3 in the UFC and probably not getting another chance. And since then, he's beaten Jurny Newsome and Eduardo Garrigori, which, like, I mean, like, nothing there looks all that great to me. I actually think he's heavily overrated, and I picked against him last time with Murphy, and I'm going to pick him against him here with Algeo because I think he's just so tough that there's no way Ramos is going to knock him out. And in addition to that, I just think he's got that, like, tough guy-ness that there's no way. There's no way Ramos comes out with a decision here with the output that Algeo has.
Okay, there's lots of – I got to remember all my points from there. First of all, I believe it's called – it's pronounced Ricardo Ramos. Ricardo Ramos. First of all, American butchering his name. Second of all, people with your bingo cards, Dan revising history. You can mark off that. Think of that one because Dan's always changing people's records. So somehow Ramos has lost 3 straight fights according in Dan's world. And I think you said tough guideness, a tough guide. Something you said something funny about Algeo. I can't remember what it was, but it was good. We'll have to rewind tape and listen to that after, but it was good. But probably not as good as Loose Chunky, but it was still all right,
Loose
y'all. All right, so
up
we
on me every time you say it, it's funny.
There we go. Dan's gonna giggle when he sees this episode posted. Then, all right. So we differed on the last two. We after starting off on the same page, so Good. That'll make the prelims more interesting. All right. Let me tell you about our last two sponsors, and we'll give you our trademark ad-free main card breakdown. So first, Underdog Fantasy. If you haven't played on Underdog Fantasy, it's a good idea to go and check out their fantasy best ball tournaments. They're some of the best around. That includes their Best Ball Mania 2 tournament, where you can win $1 million. Plus, you can play a number of games involving parlay and player props for MLB, the NBA, and more. They also have a special NBA playoffs best ball tournament coming up as well. So go to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGPN, and don't forget to enter the Best Ball Mania 2 tournament for your chance to win $1 million. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN, and I have a writer working on a NBA playoffs best ball article for the website very shortly. So probably go up Thursday or Friday on sportsgamblingpodcast.com. So check that out if you're interested in getting in on the Underdog Fantasy NBA playoff best ball thingamajig. And we are also brought to you by Odds Jam. If you're a sharp bettor, you need to sign up with Odds Jam. Odds Jam does your line shopping for you, finding the best prices on all bets, including player props. Odds Jam even provides arbitrage opportunities where you can bet on both sides of a line at two different shops to guarantee a profit. Odds Jam also tailors itself to whatever betting market you're currently in. Dominate the marketplace with Odds Jam. Sign up at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/oddsjam and use promo code SGP for 5% off. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/OzJam, promo code SGP for 5% off. Okay, main card, this fight. We're going to start things off with a middleweight fight. Very good fight that was moved from the pay-per-view up to this week because of that darn COVID thing. That would be middleweight's Jack Hermansson versus Edmund Shahbazyan, however you want to say it. Shahbazyan, he's 11-1 with 9 knockouts, 1 submission. He got knocked out his last fight. I believe that was Derek Brunson, correct?
Yes, it was Derek Brunson after Derek Brunson pretty much ragdolled him and did whatever he wanted to him for the entire fight.
Yes, Derek Brunsoned him for sure. He is 4-1 in the UFC. That was his only pro loss, his last fight. He had 11 straight wins before that. He's a protege of Ronda Rousey. I think she's his agent, manager, or something like that.
Isn't Edmund Ronda's coach is his agent, I think. And he used to, if you look back at like all the open workouts for Ronda Rousey versus Liz Carmouche, he's like the throwing dummy for Ronda Rousey in those.
Right, yeah, because he is just a kid still. How old is he? He's like, he's 23, he was
15 at that time or something like that.
Right, yep. All right, so, like I said, 4-1 in the UFC. He got into the big show off the Contender Series. He won his fight there. He's got an inch on Hermansson, 9 years younger, plus 128. Hermansson's 21-6, 11 knockouts, 6 submissions, 8-4 in the UFC. He's gone on a bit of a skid recently, lost his last fight. He's only won one of his last three. Before the UFC, he was 7-0 in Cage Warriors over in the UK. He was their middleweight champion. He also was in Bellator. He went 0-2. Interesting stat I got from MMA by the Numbers, I believe, is the website and a podcast. He is 7-2 when he lands at least one takedown in a fight, and he finished 5 of those 7 wins, I believe. When he lands a takedown, he tends to win, and he very often finishes this guy. He's got 3 inches of reach on Shahbazyan. He's got striking stats in his favor. He also lands more strikes than Shahbazyan. He's minus 160. I'm going to go against my numbers, which say younger fighter wins 61% of the time. I'm going to go with Hermansson. I think his grappling's going to get it done here. I'll take him at minus 160. And I think I have a sneaky suspicion.
I am
going to
go against you in this one. I like Shahbazyan.
Oh, wow, I know you so well, man.
Here. And part of the reason I like Shahbazyan is, well, first of all, I think what we've seen so far out of Shahbazyan is kind of an unknown. If you look at his wins, he doesn't have a signature win. His best win is over Brad Tavares. But at the same time, his only loss is to Derek Brunson, who, you know, I sneakily think is probably like a top 3 or 4 middleweight. So, you know, I don't think we've learned very much about Edmund Shahbazyan. But the one thing I will say is that his wrestling and wrestling prowess is actually pretty good. You can look back at his Contender Series win where he won by ground and pound. You can look at what he did to Jack Marshman, who granted is not a great grappler. You can look at, you know, what he did to Charles Byrd, which is, you know, light him up with punches as he pushes him against the cage. I think he's got the grappling here to either stay away from Hermanson or stay alive. Also, like, I'm not really sold on Jack Hermanson's ability to take the fight to the ground. Like, if you look at a lot of those recent wins that he got via grappling, like, Calvin Gastelum was on top in that exchange, right, when he got his heel taken. You know, Dave Branch shot the takedown that got him guillotined. Gerald Meerschaert shot the takedown that got him guillotined. So, like, yeah, he's definitely got grappling chops and good submissions, but I think to some extent somebody's got to take it there for him sometimes in order for him to get any sustained time on the ground. So I actually, in this case, like Shabazian. I think Shabazian probably is able to control enough of the positions, and I also like the fact that Shabazian has knockout power too, which I don't typically think of Hermanson as a guy who's got that either.
11 knockouts out of 21 women, so the numbers differ, but yeah.
But think about the guys he's knocked out too. So, like, again, no offense to any of the names I'm about to mention, but, like, you know, like, he last picked up a knockout over Tiawe's ladies, but that was ground and pound. He beat Brad Scott, again, ground and pound, not a pure puncher's KO. Beat Alex Nicholson, again, ground and pound. So the last time he's, like, knocked somebody out standing up was 2016 at Cage Warriors 75 against a guy named Alan Carlos, who's now 13-9. So, like, yeah, he does have TKO wins and he does have KO wins, but, like, the KO wins are, like, way back in the regional scene. The TKO wins, again, require him to be on top, and I just don't know that that's possible against Shabazian.
No, I'm going to stick with Hermanson, but Shabazian for plus money, I think, is a good play also. So wouldn't be surprised if that one comes through. Flyweights, David Dvorak, the aforementioned David Dvorak versus Rolian Paiva.
Because there's a regional Massachusetts fighter who's Portuguese, or rather he just retired, named Dennis Sweetbread Paiva, and I'm pretty sure it's spelled the same way.
When I'm writing, I'm always spelling it Pavia. I always have the I after the V, so it's annoying. And I always have Hermanson spelled wrong, too. I always get two N's and two S's. So, anyhow, thought I'd throw that out there, everyone, so you know what kind of struggles I go through while I bring you all that sweet, sweet content on the web. All right, let's break down this flyweight bout. We'll go with the Paiva. 23-4 knockouts, 3 submissions, 2-2 in the UFC. Dropped his first two, won his last two. He missed weight his last fight. I think he's had issues missing weight a lot. Is he not? Is this the guy I'm thinking of, or am I thinking of someone else?
I'm pretty certain you're correct.
Maybe not him.
I can put the intern on it while you finish up.
Yeah, all right, fine. Anyhow, at least last fight he missed weight. I think he may have missed weight for some other fights also. I'm also thinking of Norma Dumont, who's the next fight. So that might be where I'm getting mistaken. So, anywho, we got a lot of people who miss weight on this card. So he missed weight his last fight. He's 1-0 in the Contender Series. He's 3 inches taller, 1 inch of reach, 3 years younger, grappling stats in his favor, plus 128. Dvorak, 19-3, 8 knockouts, 7 submissions, so very good finisher for a flyweight. 2-0 in the UFC. He's won 15 straight fights. His last loss is 2012. I won't ask Dan how old he was then because that was a struggle trying to get him to figure out how old he was. And 2012 is just some more years added onto that. So striking stats in his favor, minus 160. I'm going chalk again. It's boring, but I'm going to take chalk here.
Yeah, I think Dvorak's the pick, and I think it's pretty easy too because for the people who have been able to control Paiva and fight the fight that they want to fight, it seems like they haven't had all that much trouble with him. And Dvorak, I think he's kind of underrated in how good he is at controlling the fight because, you know, like you said, on the regional circuit, he had lots of KOs and he looked good finishing people. Since he's come to the UFC, he did control Bruno Silva, who we talked about earlier, which was pretty impressive. And then he did the same to Jordan Espinoza, who's a guy who, while he just got, you know, kind of beat up by Tim Elliott and then fired and he got all kinds of mean stuff yelled in his face, he is a guy who has a wrestling background. So for Dvorak to have done that to two different guys, I think he'll do it to Paiva here. And, yeah, I like the chalk pick as well.
All right. Moving on, I just mentioned Norma Dumont. This will be women's featherweight belt, Felicia Spencer, Norma Dumont. Dumont, despite this being like the heaviest weight class they have in women's fighting, at least in the UFC, she misses weight a lot. She's even had fights canceled because she misses weight. She's 5-1 as a pro with 2 submission wins, no knockouts. She lost her last fight via knockout. She's 1-1 in the UFC. She's taking this fight on short notice, so there's a lot of negatives here. She's against Schaller. There's a buzzer for you. Striking stats in her favor. She lands more strikes. Grappling stats also in her favor. She's +130. Felicia Spencer is a Canadian, so you never know how. Technically, even though like she basically grew up in Florida, she's one of those Canadians. But still, we'll see if I fade the Canadian again or not. 8-2, 2 knockouts, 4 submissions. She's never been finished in a fight. She's super tough. 2-2 in the UFC, but her losses were to basically the 2 greatest women's female fighters of all time, Amanda Nunes and Chris Cyborg. She lost her last fight. That was Cyborg, or was that Nunes? Nunes. Dan calls her Nunes. I call her Nunes. So she swapped wins and losses back and forth. So basically, she gets, I don't want to say a can, but she gets an easier fight. She wins that, and then they throw her in with the killer and a savage, and she loses that, and then they give her an easy fight. She wins that, and then they throw in her with the killer, and she loses that. Before all this, she was the Invicta featherweight champion, where she went 6-0 in that promotion. She's got an inch of reach, -165. I'm going Canada here because it's a fake Canadian, so I'll take my country woman at -165. I think she's too much for Dumont, especially in short
notice. I'm going to take Dumont. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I saw a lot of people being like, it's wild that Spencer's not a bigger favorite. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of wanted Dumont to be a bigger underdog because I sneakily like her here because if you look at Spencer, the thing that Spencer does really well, and she does it exceptionally well, is she grapples really well, right? She's an exceptional grappler. She's very, very good once she gets to the ground. We saw her do that to Zara Farain and Megan Anderson. And granted, she did it in Invicta against Pam Sorensen, who's probably a more impressive win than the two I just mentioned in the UFC in terms of being able to out-grapple them. But the thing about Norma Dumont is she's so much bigger than Felicia Spencer. Like, Felicia Spencer being 5'6", and not like a big, muscly 5'6". She's like, you know, Norma Dumont is, like, very physically strong, and we saw her when she fought Megan Anderson, who did, granted, eventually knock her out with the hands. She put Megan Anderson up against the cage and was, like, all over her before they eventually broke apart and she got tagged. I don't think Felicia Spencer's going to tag her, and I actually think Dumont's got the better striking on the feet as long as she can keep it there. So I'm going to go with Norma Dumont here as one more underdog, and I'm going to say I'm not super confident in it, but I do like that she's going to get to be up at featherweight and not have to miss bantamweight again. I think that this is, man, it's never the right move to go to women's featherweight, but like I'm at least glad that she's not going to probably brutally miss weight by like 5 pounds.
You'd hope not, but we shall see. On to some more chunky guys. Vera Jandara, we'll call him. Jared Vandera. He's chunky, right? He's one of those loose chunky kind, right?
I can't even say loose chunky without laughing. Sure, yeah, he's loose chunky.
And Justin Toffa, according to my records, is chunky also.
He's like Mark Hunt.
There. Yes, he's got the tattoo, and he's from the same part of the world, so there you go. Vandera, I believe, is a friend of the Top Turtle MMA podcast. I think I heard him on
Vandera,
right?
Yeah, Vandera has been on there before, yep.
Vandera, right, yeah. He has some interesting things to say. He's 11-5, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions, so he is a finisher. Only one of his wins went to the decision. He's only got 1 knockout loss also on his record, which is pretty impressive for a heavyweight. He's 0-1 in the UFC, and that was via TKO, his loss. 1-0 in the Contender Series. He's 4 inches taller, 6 inches of reach. Grappling stats are in his favor, but we're talking only a couple of fights for him with those stats. +155. Justin Toffa, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions, all of his wins via knockout. He's only got 1 knockout loss in his record also. He's 1-2 in the UFC. He lost his last fight. He's chunky, it says here. I actually put that in my spreadsheet. He's chunky. He's a year younger. Striking stats in his favor, plus he lands twice as many strikes as Vandera, who has 2 A's at the end of his name. He's at minus 195. Dan, I haven't let you pick first for some reason much tonight, so you go ahead.
I'm taking Justin Tapa all day here. I like Jared Vandera. I like his grappling skills. I just don't see him getting this fight to the ground ever, and he is badly outmatched on the feet, in my opinion. On the ground, could he finish Tapa? Sure, but, like, his takedown isn't great. I think when I saw him on Contender Series, like, he actually looked like he was getting the worst end of the ground game for a little while. Spivak definitely gave him the business on the ground. I like Jared Vandera, but just, like, he's going to get pieced up on the feet by a far superior kickboxer here in Justin Tapa.
Yep, Tapa is the pick. Agreed. All right, co-main event, women's strawweight. Carla Esparza versus...
Oh, Yan Xiaonan.
There you go. Dan loves, love how he says the name, Yan Xiaonan. It flows off his tongue, so I always let him say it. They're fighting, like I said, women's featherweight co-main event. We'll go with Carla Esparza, the Cookie Monster, first. She's 17-6, 3 knockouts, 4 submissions, 8-4 in the UFC. She's won 4 straight fights. She was the very first UFC strawweight champion. That was back in 2014. She held the belt up to 2015. She won that after winning the Ultimate Fighter. She was 3-0 in the Ultimate Fighter house, and then she won the championship on the finale. Before all this, she was also the first Invicta strawweight champion, where she was 3-0. And before all that, she was in Bellator, where she was 0-2. These are some more stats from MMA by the Numbers, which I think is run by a Canadian guy, so you definitely should check it out. She has the most takedowns in women's UFC history, which is very, very impressive. And she has the 5th most control time of any fighter, I don't think I was just female. I think I was any fighter. She's got the 5th most control time while after she gets the fighter down. So it's not just, they're not just popping right back up after she takes them down. She's at plus 100, so even money for her. And her opponent, Yan. Nice. It just saves me from saying it. 13-1 with 1 no contest. 5 knockouts on her record. She's got 1 submission loss. That's her only loss as a pro. She's 6-0 in the UFC. I was kind of surprised to see she's fought 6 times already in the UFC, but she has. Another stat from MMA by the Numbers. She's 4th all-time in significant strikes landed per fight. So that's for either gender. She's landed 96.3 significant strikes per fight. That's best for 4th all-time in the UFC history. She's 4 inches taller. She's 2 years younger. Not surprisingly, the striking stats are in her favor, and she lands 3 times as many strikes as Esparza does. Minus 125. I am going with the striker. That was one of my... If you go with the striker, I will go with the striker. You're at minus 125.
Yeah, and I think you're not only right in like, when in doubt, go with the striker, but in this case... If you look at the types of people who have given trouble to Carla Esparza in the past, it's people who can manage distance well. It's either people who can stuff her takedown straight up or people who can manage distance well. Like, Michelle Waterson gave her a really hard time with her takedowns, as did Marina Rodriguez, and those are two women who do an exceptionally good job at managing distance. And, yeah, Carla Esparza came away with split decisions in both of those, which I guess is good for her. She's coming off of a split decision victory. I won't rewrite too much history, otherwise Jeff will freak out on me.
I'm waiting for it. She's really 0-3 over her.
And I can't even remember whether or not I scored those fights for her or not. But, like, she has trouble with people who maintain good distance. Yan Xiaonan does a great job at cutting angles and keeping distance and pouring strikes on you. Like, it seems like she's a nightmare matchup for Esparza. That being said, Esparza could totally come in here and just hit a couple of big takedowns and then everything looks stupid. But with that being said, I think the probability of that is lower, and I'm going to go with Xiaonan.
So who's our pick,
Yan Xiaonan? Also, I'm going to say this already.
There you go.
If you're picking Yan Xiaonan in any fight, please, for the love of God, pick her by decision, because I think she's been in the UFC for 6 fights and she has 6 decision victories. Yeah. So, like, that is the easiest prop out there. The last time one of her fights did not go to decision was because of a clash of heads, and then they just stopped the fight then. So, like, it's going to go the distance.
There you go. There's a juicy prop for you. All right, brings us to our main event. Bantamweights, five rounds. Rob Font versus Cody No Love Garbrandt, the former champ. We will go with Garbrandt. He's 12-3 with 10 knockouts, so it's very impressive for a lighter weight class guy. All three of his losses have come via knockouts when he was fighting very stupid and got himself knocked out. He's 7-3 in the UFC. He was the bantamweight champ 2016-17. He won via knockout his last fight. He lost three before that, all via knockout. Another MMA by the numbers stat I got. He is one of only three men in UFC history to average at least one knockdown per fight. He's knocked down 10. He's got 10 knockdowns in 10 UFC fights. So it's very impressive for a lighter weight guy. He's 4 years younger than Font. He's at minus 105. Rob Font, who's from Dan's neck of the woods, 18-4, eight knockouts, four submissions. He's got one submission loss on his record that will not make a difference here. He's never been knocked out. 8-3 in the UFC. He's won three straight, 4 or 5. Got 6 inches of reach. He's the more active striker of the two. Grappling stats in his favor, minus 120. I have no love for Cody Garbrandt.
He just fights really dumb.
I don't think Font's not really a knockout guy, but I still think he's winning this fight.
Thing for me here is that, so, you know, you mentioned he's not a big knockout guy. Who's the last guy who knocked out Cody Garbrandt? It was Pedro Munhoz. He's not a big knockout guy either.
Yes, that's true.
The problem with Cody Garbrandt and what you will see to continue to be his problem is he's a good technical fighter for about 35 seconds, and then he's not. Granted, there is the fight with Dominic Cruz we can point to where he sort of bucked that trend, but that's not the norm for him, right? Like, he fights very smart for 35 minutes until somebody reminds him he's in a fist fight, and he goes in swinging blindly. That knockout of Rafael Assuncao was crazy telegraphed, right? Like, he brought his hand all the way back literally to his hands and swung with his whole body, and it just happened to land. Like, it's great knockout. It's a wonderful highlight, but, like, it is definitely telegraphed and a little bit sloppy. He's fighting a guy who boxes pretty technically in Rob Font, right? Like, we just watched him do some pretty mean things to Marlon Moraes. You know, he looked good against Ricky Simon, which is not easy to do. And, like, he looks like he's progressing at the right time here, too. So, for me, I think Rob Font, whether he's a knockout artist or not, is just smart enough to stay away from the big, heavy stuff that Cody Garbrandt swings and then punishes him for throwing those punches in the first place. So, yeah, I like Rob Font in this fight, too. It kind of feels weird to think that this fight is even money coming in with a former title holder in Cody Garbrandt, but even then I still can't bring myself to pick him.
No, he's just too dumb a fighter to put it bluntly. Sorry, no love, but that's just the way I see it. So, all right, we talked about a prop already. Who was that again, Dan?
We took Yan Xiaonan by decision, which, by the way, I'm not sure what the odds are on that, but I'm sure you're not getting much better than her actual odds because, like, by finish, I'm looking it up right now. Yan Xiaonan by KO is plus 800. Yan Xiaonan by submission is plus 1,000. Yan Xiaonan by decision is just like a little bit over plus 100. So, like, you're going to get her into the plus money, which is, I guess, nice.
Yep. All right. Any other props
I mentioned
you like?
Justin Toffa should win that fight by knockout.
Right.
If you do, again, this is another one that it is the most likely outcome, but you can take his, whatever you said his number was, negative 170, negative 180, or whatever.
195,
even bigger. You can turn that into a plus 100. So you can get even money on him with a KO. So if you'd like him to win in here, you want to make it a little, like I said, a little bit juicier. I think the easiest way to do it is to just take him by KO here.
Yep. All right. We both lost on our locks last week, sadly. I think it's my turn to go first, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
All right, I'm having trouble picking one this week. Let me see who I like as a lock. I'm going to go with Claudio Silva, minus 115 over Court McGee. I like that pick. I like that the number's so low also. So give me that one.
I was debating between two. I was hoping you would pick one, and you didn't take either of them. So damn you for that. I'm going to take Senior Perfecto, Bill Algeo, over Ricardo Bosch. I like I said before, I like his toughness here. I think he's able to hang in there with Ricardo Hamosh. And then just for a quick little teaser, the other one I was thinking about, but the number is quite a bit higher, was Justin Taffa, you know, the one I mentioned before as a prop.
Okay, so the locks are Claudio Silva for me at -115 over Court McGee, and Senior Perfecto Bill Algeo -125 over Ricardo Hamosh for Dan, and he also likes Justin Taffa, correct?
That just about does it.
All right. Your homework, obviously watch the fights. You can watch the fights with us on Twitter if you like. Usually we're on there bantering back and forth while the fights are on. I would be at Jeff Fox Writer. He would be at Gumby Vreeland. What else should you do? Listen to Prelim Pickers, Dan's other podcast, because I heard his guest this week is the greatest guest he's ever had. And how long have you been doing that show, Prelim Picker?
I think over a year now, a year and a half.
And how long have you known me?
I've known you for 11 years, 10 or 11 years.
Oh, okay. How many times have I been on Prelim Picker?
Is it zero? I know you've been on Top Turtle twice or three times.
0.0.
Was that an Animal House reference?
It was.
Yes.
But anywho, maybe I'll break that, break the seal on it this week. We'll have to wait and see. So, and make sure you listen to Top Turtle, where he has, it just popped up in my feed today. And Christos Giagos he has as a guest, and he has someone from this card, I think, and I can't remember who. Who's your other guest?
Yancy Medeiros, who
I picked against him.
I picked against him. Don't tell him.
Whoa. Dan does not usually do that. So what else should you do? Oh, you should read our stuff on sportsgamblingpodcast.com, and you should go to MMA-manifesto.com, and you should enter the Pick'em contest and read all the good stuff there. Dan will have his what do you do again? A prelim superstar article every week. Breakout star. You've only done it for like a decade. I can't remember what it's called. Because he hasn't done it yet this week, ladies and gentlemen.
a little behind the ball.
That's all right. And he does a live his dog pick and all that stuff. So anyhow, check out that website. Check out our Twitter. Subscribe to our podcast, right? Our MMA Gambling Podcast feed. I think that's it. And as usual, Dan's going to take us out like he always does, right?
Yeah, because I'm Daniel Gumby Vreeland. He's Jack Sox. We'll catch you next week.
Bye-bye.